treated as you, as citizens of the world, whether you be Christian, heathen, or otherwise. If you're a citizen of the world outside the communist orbit, and even if you were behind the bars of the communist countries, you should be able to hear what I'm hearing, going to say this morning, and giving the truth about Vietnam. Today is the fourth day of August, 1988. See, there's still some people coming in, but we'll go right ahead because the meeting was to have started already. The big question is always coming up from time to time, and you'll still hear that same question being broached by uninformed or those of us who have depended upon the controlled news media to tell us what's going on in the world. And they're all generally, I would categorize, and this is not a legal term, but I call them traitors, because they're out to help destroy the sovereignty of these United States, Canada, and all other free countries. They are out to create a one world government. And we'll talk about that in detail, I believe it's tonight. Yes, tonight. The world conspiracy. Well, why were we in Vietnam? That's the question that's often asked. And they always debate about whether we should have been there or not. Well, the reason we were there was because way back in the 1940s and 50s, the latter 40s, early 50s, as looking back on World War II and how we ended up in a world war, it was recognized that free countries, democratic countries, were going to have to join together in mutual defense treaties or pacts. Mutual defense, standing together. The old adage, if we will not stand together, we will fall one by one or separately. The United States entered into 44 of those that were known, and there were quite a few that still exist that are secret. But we had 44 total that had been approved or ratified by the Senate. You're very well aware of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. But this was CETO, the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. And of course, we also have one, RIO, and I've forgotten what RIO really stands for, but it's an organization that says that all of the countries of South America, Central America, and Mexico were united to keep any foreign power from committing an incursion into this hemisphere. Well, obviously, we haven't honored that treaty. And we've also violated the Monroe Doctrine that's been in effect ever since President Monroe that said the same thing. So we don't live by our treaties. And of course, as we pointed out, the Soviet make treaties to be broken. Now, the conditions of the Southeast Asia Treaty were very clear. The country had to be clearly being invaded by a foreign power. That had been evident for a long time before we came to their help, that they were being invaded from North Vietnam and in running and coming through Cambodia also. But one of the conditions was that we couldn't just go in at our discretion. A country that was so being invaded had to request that we come in. And you can see the reason for that. March the 8th, 1964, finally, the President of Vietnam requested the United States to come to his assistance, that is, with troops. We had been giving assistance in compliance with CETO. And by the way, there were only two senators voted against the ratification of CETO: Gruning of Alaska, Wayne Morris of the state of Washington. That was all. And the other treaties were equally massively passed by votes. We've quoted before, but it's worth remembering again, the communist plan for world conquest was written and repeated many times since, but written in 1921 by Lenin. Our purpose is to create a worldwide Soviet republic. First, we will take Eastern Europe. They had it by the end of 1946. Then the masses of Asia. They're consolidating that now. Then we will surround the United States, Cuba, Central America, all those countries, which will be the last stronghold of capitalism. We will not have to attack. It'll fall into our hands like a rotten fruit. So they don't intend to attack us. The whole plan is for us to surrender. Their plans don't change. Brezhnev, just to update him, Brezhnev said to the World Communist Party Congress, Gus Hall and Angela Davis from the United States were there, among other representatives of the United States in 1973, said this: "We are, with detente, we are accomplishing with detente what our predecessors were unable to accomplish with the mailed fist. Trust us, comrades, by 1985, remember that date, by 1985, as a consequence of detente, that's the Carter program, detente, we will have achieved most of our objectives in Western Europe. We will have consolidated our positions, and a decisive shift in the balance of power will be such that come 1985, we will be able to exert our will wherever we desire." And they have. Why 1985? Well, by that time we had SALT I, SALT II. SALT II was interesting. The Senate would not ratify it, yet insisted that President Reagan live by it. It was a treaty made under Carter. The communists laughed about SALT. SALT stood for Strategic Arms Limitation Treaties. But to the communists, they called it Stop America's Leading Technology. And that's what it did. It stopped us dead in our development of defensive weapons. And of course, INF and SDI, the Intermediate Nuclear Force Weapons, we'll come back to that. SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative. They've stopped that. Absolutely essential. I'll just put you one scenario of the United States without SDI. And by the way, anybody that tells you that SDI is not capable, not technically possible, is absolutely ignorant of the state of the art. It was possible when I retired in 1973, 15 years ago. Very inexpensively, too, comparatively speaking. A lot cheaper than the stupid MX program. But MX is good for Bechtel Corporation, which is the largest construction corporation in the world. And Shultz, Secretary of State, is the former president of Bechtel. And the recent departed Secretary of Defense Weinberger was vice president of Bechtel. So naturally, we'll buy things that give Bechtel millions and billions of dollars. Well, the SDI, let's say, for example, and this almost happened 3 years ago, a Soviet submarine loaded with 16 thermonuclear missiles, each missile having at least 3 warheads, maybe as many as 10 warheads, pre-targeted on cities of the United States. And once it's launched, there's nothing can stop it, and those warheads will go where they've been pre-programmed to go. And in a fire, solid circuitry begins to melt and things begin to happen randomly with no control. Those missiles could have all been launched. Fortunately, they weren't. Without SDI, there's nothing we can do about it. Gorbachev could pick up the red phone and call Mr. Reagan and say, "Look, Ron, we got a problem. Our submarine has just launched its missiles, and I'm sorry to tell you that about 30 or 40 of your cities are going to go up in a cloud of atomic waste. But believe me, Ron, it's an accident. With the way they keep their word in the past, you might have a little trouble believing him. This may be the first strike for the total destruction of the United States." So Ron has a problem. Does he hit the panic button and strike back? It may be an accident. That's the situation without SDI. With SDI, very simple. When such a thing happened and we picked them up coming in or Gorbachev called or whatever, you simply activate the Strategic Defense Initiative, and wherever the missiles were launched, the first, if it was launched from over in the Soviet Union or anywhere in the oceans, the first would be while the missile is accelerating. I've even shot a missile down with a Sidewinder and an old FJ-4 subsonic jet. We did it to Polaris off the East Coast as an experiment, because the missile, when it lifts off, you know, it's going very slow. So you just simply zap the thing with a heat-seeking missile. So those can, during its liftoff phase, while it's still over the enemy territory, you blast his own missile. If there's any fallout problems, it's on his head. And the next strike, the mid-course, is when the missile reaches its apogee, that's its highest point, and it's slowed down, and now it's coming back down. It's easy to zap it there also, because it's not going too fast. And then if you missed it in the first. And then the third one would be when it's coming back, and actually after it's re-entered the atmosphere, then you can hit at whatever survived from that. Then the final would be a ring of ABMs, anti-ballistic missile sites, around strategic targets, and they fire at whatever survives. We have systems right now that could destroy at least 93% of all the missiles that the Soviet Union could launch. They say, "Well, we don't have a perfect system." Well, as I remember in World War II, we shot a lot of bullets that didn't kill anybody, so it wasn't a perfect system. But if you even destroyed one intercontinental ballistic missile today, it's a better system than we have. We can't do any. So that's how important the SDI is, and that is the reason Gorbachev and all the others have insisted that we stop the development of the SDI, because it would neutralize their massive programs of intercontinental ballistic missiles all over the place. They said, "Well, we'll just simply saturate your system." Baloney. You know what? It would take us $90 billion. That's a lot of money. It would take us $90 billion to put a 93% effective SDI into position, and we could do it within 3 or 4 years if we started now. Do you know what it would take the Soviet Union, it would cost the Soviet Union to saturate that system? It's been estimated it would take $3 to $6 trillion for them to saturate the system. They can't even afford what they're doing. They have to borrow the money from us to keep their own defense system going now. So you see, he's just blowing smoke and wouldn't work. Well, if you think that's sort of out of date, 1973, well, this come right on down to 1987. November the 2nd. 1987, Gorbachev addressing the Communist Party's Central Committee, that's the policy level. This is a quote from his speech. "We are not retreating, even one step." Remember, Lenin said we'll take 2 steps forward, 1 step back. He's saying we're not even going to retreat 1 step anymore. We're not retreating even 1 step from socialism, from Marxist-Leninism, from everything that has been gained to this time. In 1917, 70 years ago, we parted from the old world. We rejected it once and for all. We're moving toward a new world. the world of communism, and we will never turn off that road. 36 days later, on the 8th of December, 1987, Gorbachev and Reagan signed the Intermediate Nuclear Force Treaty, INF, which dooms and destroys NATO and Western Europe. We take all of our missiles out. They only move theirs back. Did you know that the SS-20, the Soviet's intermediate missile, was obsolete? Its booster system was obsolete. They were going to have to replace it 2 years from now anyhow. And I don't think you knew that the INF treaty does not destroy one warhead. All it did was let the Soviet Union junk their old S-20 booster system, take the warhead off of the SS-20. It fits exactly on the SS-25, which makes it a 3,000-mile range instead of the intermediate. We take all of our missiles out of Europe that could hit the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union just puts the warheads on another missile a little further back, but they can still hit Eastern Europe or Western Europe and the whole area. So we disarmed NATO. And the horrible thing of that is, in the past, without SDI, the Soviet Union, if they wanted to make a first strike, would have to hit Europe first. Because if they didn't, then we could destroy them with the intermediate nuclear forces that we had there. Now, they don't have to worry about Europe. The United States will be the victim of the first strike. I am convinced, even if Ronald Reagan receives the Nobel Peace Prize, the world, if we survive and be able to see history, he will go down in history as did Neville Chamberlain when he came back from his treaties with Hitler, saying, "Peace in our time." It's exactly, only the stakes are a lot higher this time. We're after a new world. Have you heard of the New Age movement? Well, it's all a part of this conspiracy. George Shultz, Satan worshiper, Secretary of State, is on the board of directors of the New Age movement. Don't pay much attention to what Shultz and the people say. Watch what they do. They're quite capable of making beautiful speeches. And I want to tell you about your congressman, too. We found this trick in Washington. The character may vote for a bill, because that's all that's ever recorded, but watch and see how the fellow votes when it comes up to appropriate the funds to implement the bill. You know, you can vote for a lot of bills, but if they cost money and you don't appropriate the money, it doesn't get done. Did you know in 1987, just coincidentally, celebrating the 70th anniversary of world communism, the New Age movement had peace demonstrations in every nation's capital on the face of the earth? Well coordinated, I would say. Peace and safety. Remember? 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 3 says, when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction will come upon them as the pain in childbirth, and they shall not escape. Good cheer, be of good cheer. They get it in the neck or wherever. Jeremiah 6:14 and Jeremiah 8:11 says, when they cry peace and peace, 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 and there is no peace, beware. You must remember that the communist objectives of world conquest never change. It's only their tactics that change. Even Khrushchev, when he was confronted and said, have you abandoned your objectives of the world conquest? And he said, that will happen when the shrimp learns to whistle. Brezhnev was asked the same thing, and he said that will happen when the skies rain down borscht, or soup, or whatever. But to him, it's borscht. So they don't change. And you just heard what Gorbachev had to say about it. So they don't change. Well, how do they plan to conquer the world? Through wars of national liberation. Remember, Khrushchev said, we will never take the world in one lion gulp or bite. We will take the world the way a duck eats the corn, a grain at a time. It's worked. Since 1917, 70 years, the Soviet Union has conquered 54 countries. So it's been highly successful. And they're in the process of taking these countries, and they're well on the way with the help of the United States in conquering these countries. South Africa, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Panama, Honduras, Mexico, South Korea, Taiwan, the Philippines, Chile, Colombia, and on and on. But those are clearly on their hit list right now from all the activities. And that will lead to the United States surrender. External encirclement plus internal demoralization plus nuclear blackmail or threat to use the nuclear force will lead to the United States surrender. Remember? And the United States will fall into our hands like a rotten fruit. Why were we not allowed to win in Vietnam when it had probably been the simplest war that the United States has ever been involved in to win? Well, the reason was to create the false illusion or impression that democratic nations will never be able to win a war of the communist national liberation. That's it. That's the whole thing. Well, let's look at Vietnam. As I said, or maybe I haven't said, for 8 years in Washington, D.C., I served on high-level planning boards. 5 years before going to Vietnam and 3 years after coming back from Vietnam. I was involved in contingency planning of many plans, and specifically CITO, and more specifically South Vietnam, when it became apparent that it was the next on the list. Laos had already gone. We had not defended that country, so that was academic to talk about that. The president issued the directive through the State Department and on down to the Defense Department. The objectives in Vietnam were this, and we were constrained to operate and accomplish this. There were quite a few constraints. We may have a chance to get into those. I'll just mention the fact that we were not, the only constraint we had in Vietnam is that we could not use any technique of war that had, we could only use the techniques of war that had been used since the end of World War II. So therefore, we could not use thermonuclear weapons, we could not use naval blockades, and there were quite a few things that were off limits. But that was all right, no big problem. We wouldn't have needed them anyway. But the objectives were this: to stop communist aggression. Second, create an army in South Vietnam capable of defending itself against North Vietnam. Third, create a government politically stable. Fourth, an economy functioning and sound. Now, those four objectives would take time. I was among the group that insisted that that would take at least 7 years. You don't create an army overnight. You don't create governments and economies. But because the budget functions on five-year cycles, we decided to go with a five-year program. The communists seem to like five-year programs too. Vietnam is a very interesting place. Some people don't even have a perspective of the size of Vietnam. The coastline can be an advantage in a military operation, but it can also be a real problem from infiltration from the coastline. Now, the coastline of South Vietnam would start about Boston and go all the way to Jacksonville, Florida. That is the coastline. That's a lot of territory. But it makes it easy for us to supply across the beach, although, and we're willing to face the infiltration from that direction, because in Vietnam, the infiltrators were not coming from the sea anyhow. Now, a successful military operation would have been this. First off, 97% of all the people in South Vietnam live within 30 miles of the ocean. They're a coastal people, because you get more than 30 miles into the interior, except in the Mekong Delta, which is very much like our Mississippi Delta, very rich, highly productive. You get more than 30 miles inland, it's nothing but jungle, triple-deck jungle. Nothing in there but mosquitoes, baboons, water buffalo, all kinds of animals, tigers, lions, everything you can imagine, elephants. Remember old Bring 'em Back Alive, Frank Buck? That's where he was getting all of his animals. Khe Sanh was his old hunting lodge. Khe Sanh was probably the greatest single military victory in the whole war, and yet the newspapers here made it out to be a defeat. We deliberately set a trap for the communists, put 5,000 Marines up there and dared them to come get them. Did you know that the Marines were sieged for 60 days? Yeah, they were sieged. We were running 20 airplanes a day in there and only lost one the whole time we were there. And that one was more of an accident than it was a credit to the Vietnamese, the communists. And we were literally thwarting General Gap, North Vietnamese. We were slaughtering his army in and around Khe Sanh. But yet the news media would have you believe that it was siege, and we couldn't do anything about it. The Marines were up there having barbecues and all sorts of things, having a pretty good time. But when the alarm sounded, a rocket would come and they'd run into the bunker and hope it didn't destroy their barbecue pit. But that's the news media for you. Well, the successful plan with that situation, with the population and the food and everything all along the coast, the plan was to put in 200,000 troops. Just occupy that relatively small area, and if the communists want to stay out in the jungle and feed the mosquitoes and the tigers and live miserable, let them stay there. Couldn't care less. And the next step was to close Haiphong Harbor. Haiphong Harbor, the Russians had about 100 to 150 ships full-time employed in supplying the war. But when the Japanese had Haiphong Harbor in World War II, there's a canal, a channel really, that goes up through a big sandbar. The channel is about 5 miles long. It comes in, it makes almost a 90-degree turn, sort of an S-turn, and only one ship at a time can get into Haiphong Harbor through that channel. When the Japanese had it, we just ran an old clunker up there full of rocks and cement and sunk it in the middle of the channel, and that closed the harbor. That's what we were going to do here. But McNamara and Dean Rusk said, oh no, can't do that. Might create a hardship. I want you to notice something, that we were never allowed to bomb North Vietnam. It's the first war, no it wasn't, Korea was the first one. Was the first war, one of the, except for Korea, where the invading country was protected and we could only bomb the country that was being invaded. North Vietnam was off limits for bombing. The craters that Jane, old Hanoi Fonda, showed you, and Ramsey Clark, our Attorney General at that time, the craters that were in North Vietnam in and around Hanoi up in that area were from their own missiles. They were firing these surface-to-air missiles, SAMs, and only one out of about 18 or 19 ever hit anything. So Newton said anything that goes up must come down. Remember that? So they'd see the planes flying overhead and all of a sudden they start firing all these SAM missiles and all those sort of things. In a fighter plane, and I've been on fighter missions. I went on two just to see what they were like. when you see a SAM coming and they light off and they make a lot of smoke, and if it's coming at you, you almost dive straight at it. But not quite straight at it. You're not that stupid. But you dive more or less straight toward it, and it can't turn. It's just got to, you can just watch it go right on by, and then it peters out and it falls right back down in the area. So they would assume that we were bombing them, but we weren't. It was off limits. Only let the country that was being invaded suffer. That's a little different in war techniques. We weren't allowed to hit the enemy that way in Korea either. By the way, have you heard...